again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. It's been a while. A little creaky, a little less oil than it once was, but we're taking this beautiful Big Red Bus out onto the open summer roads of Chicago with my co-pilot here, the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. I'm surprised, distraught, in fact, that you called the bus creaky after Wendell Carter Jr.'s excellent start to summer league.
Well, it's only creaky because we haven't taken it out and it hasn't been oiled in a while. But now that he's on board, it'll be smooth sailing as he balances things out. This is incredible. I mean, what a performance! I know. I don't even know if we should get into it yet because I've noticed a couple of your tweets haven't been as ecstatic as I've been about it. So we'll get into that shortly. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about, I think, the topic that a lot of us, we haven't had a chance to discuss yet, which of course is the big news about Zach LaVine. And the contract obviously was signed Friday. We haven't heard your take on it. Love to get your opinion on, was this the right decision? Was this a bad decision? Let's get your 411. What say you?
I think it's a good decision out of maybe a couple not great alternatives. I don't think you could let him go. I get why the people who don't like Zach really don't like him. His advanced metrics are very poor. He doesn't generate win shares. There's this feeling that he doesn't actually help you win games. And then I get why people who like him, because you watch him and you're like, this guy just looks like he should be a great basketball player. He has these skills that look like they should translate. So you figure if he can learn some defense and he gets a little bit more awareness, he's a guy who may be a star potential. It's probably about $2 million more a year than I'd like it to be. But with the cap supposed to rise with like $8 million, $9 million next year, it really ends up being, from a percentage basis, not so scary. It's reported, at least as now, being 19.5 flat for 4 years. So that percentage of the cap is going to drop, you know, each year too, because he's not getting raises and the cap will increase. So I think it's fine. I don't think you had a better choice. It does make the two max free agent plan in 2019 a little dicier, but still technically within reach if they pull enough moves. So I think overall it's a good idea. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two max free agent thing is kind of like a pipe dream. I mean, how many times does that happen? And I know there's all this talk about Butler and Irving, which we'll get into, I'm sure, shortly. It was kind of like a no-win situation, I think, for the Bulls. You know, I think ideally it would have been you re-sign him at a much cheaper rate. You know, I thought the fair amount would have been $15 million for 4 years at $60 million. You're paying, obviously, a little bit more than that. But I do also understand you can't just let him walk. And I don't think he's completely worthless. I don't understand the I do understand. There's just a reflexive reaction to criticize Bulls management for anything they do. And you saw it all over Twitter, how stupid, how incredibly dumb to sign this guy for 4 years, $20 million, basically. They were matching, you know. They really didn't, I don't think, had really a choice in this matter. You can't let an asset, which he clearly is, the Kings wanted to pay him, you know, a significant amount of money. He's 23. And I just keep on hearing people, I think, are going a little bit too much into his performance last year. That was a really difficult situation. He comes on to a team that's actively trying to lose. His minutes are limited. He's trying to play for an agreement. I don't think you can judge, make a complete judgment on Zach LaVine. I thought he played pretty poorly for the most part, but there were enough good signs. The game against Minnesota, the game, he had a couple good games, I thought, where I felt like, all right, you know, I'd be willing to give this guy a shot. And, you know, there are warning signs too, but I don't think the contract is something that you can't move. Scoring costs money in this league, and, you know, he does bring that. He does bring that ability to score. It's kind of like I view it as a situation where on one, he's probably on the high end of where they would have signed him. But I think when we look back in 4 years, we'll probably be somewhere in between where both groups are right now. You know, we'll be like, well, he had some good moments. I hope we'll be better than that, but I think that's where we'll probably end up. What do you think?
I don't know. I think he's either going to be worth a deal or he's going to be a total bust.
I think middle ground.
There's going to be a lot of in between. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where you find the middle ground. He's a guy who has pretty obvious flaws, and he's either going to fix them because he's very young and, you know, can still do that, or he's not going to fix them, in which case he's just not a very good player. You know, if you saw John Lucas in the game, he hit his floater over LeBron, you might say we should give him a ton of money. He had some good moments. I mean, you know, just having one good game against Minnesota doesn't do anything for me.
You know, yeah, but that's not what I'm basing.
We'll see how it goes. You know, I don't think it is going to be one of those things where, like, it'll kind of sort of be okay. It's either going to end up being, to me, probably a really good deal, or it's going to be an albatross. And I get why the Bulls had to take that risk, or chose to take that risk. I shouldn't say had to, but if they didn't, they would have been definitely aiming for the lottery. You know, from my end, I know you don't think the free agent thing is a possibility, but I think if Zach has a great year and the Bulls team has a good year, I think free agency could be very attractive in the East. And so I think you got to position yourself to try and grow and try and make big moves and try to win a title. And your best bet to do that is to attract a couple of star free agents. And it's possible with Levine on the roster if they're careful. And that is your best path to winning a title. And so I think you should attempt to do that. Now, maybe it won't work. There's a good chance it won't work. But if it doesn't, you're not really losing anything either. So I think you just keep trying and hoping for the best. And if plan A doesn't work, you move to plan B.
Well, a couple of things. I'm not basing it on one game, right? I'm not saying the Minnesota game was enough to convince me. I'm basing it on the 2 years previous where in Minnesota where he played, for the most part, pretty well, 38% from three, and especially before his injury, I thought he was playing very well, you know, averaging 20 points per game. Never going to be stellar in defense, but I'm saying I saw enough signs in the 27 minutes per game over the 24 games to say, you know what, this won't be a total, it's a gamble, but I don't think it's a total disaster. One saving grace about Levine I do want to mention, I don't think a lot of people have mentioned, is he seems to have almost like a royalty, a very good reputation among the league. I noticed it at the dunk contest last year, and I think a lot of players like him. And I think he is a guy that legitimately can recruit. And I think that is important. We've talked about it before with Derrick Rose. You read about how Boogie Cousins went to Golden State. That was almost a complete recruiting job by the players. Him calling these guys, having conversations with these players, I think that's a big deal. And I used to not believe in it, but the more I read about how these guys end up at places, I think it's bigger than anything else. Those relationships. And I think Levine has those. And I think that's our best likely for to bring two guys in to a team that's going to just suck and be horrible. I think is far more unlikely than having one guy and maybe a couple, you know, 2A pieces come in to play with Zach LaVine and a couple other players that they may or may not like or may like.
Yeah, I do think the recruiting angle is always helpful. I mean, it's just like, so you've been looking for jobs in your life. I've been looking for jobs in my life. I think everyone listening to the podcast, at least over 20 or so, has probably at some point been looking for a job. And if you know someone at a place, it's always a big incentive, like, to go there, right? You always want to work with friends if you can, people you like, and, you know, have some kind of trust on the inside that this is a good place to be. So I do think that makes a big difference in any walk of life, and the NBA is certainly no exception. And we've seen that with Miami, obviously, with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and how that team formed. And I think the players played a huge role in getting Kevin Durant over to Golden State, making sure, you know, they didn't feel like he would, you know, be out of place or anything else there, and selling him on that situation, even though it was a great situation. You know, some players might be like, yeah, nah, we don't need you. We want a title without you. We don't want another star. So I do think having a good recruiting piece on your team and having that type of reputation coming out is a very good thing. So hopefully that does work out, like you say.
So a little bit of background from your part. You're more of a cap expert than I am. Is this a total disaster? Is there any way? I keep on hearing conflicting things. You know, our good friend Kevin from NBC has said, I think I saw something from one of his tweets, that there is a possibility we still could get two max guys. Is that unlikely? Is that a possibility? Or are we not? Is that not going to happen?
Well, so I don't think Kevin said that, because Kevin consistently sticks things into the Bulls cap space that are not really, we'll say, necessary.
Okay.
To fit in there. Like he put on, like, if you look at his tweet that I saw most recently, he had like Cameron Payne's cap hold on there, which is $9 million. Like, it's pretty unlikely that we're going to keep Cameron Payne past the season.
It's Kevin Anderson, you know, by the way.
So you can just get rid of his cap hold, right? Add $9 million of room. And he's got Bobby Portis' cap hold on there, which I think is like $7 million in change. And there's a good chance we might want to keep Portis. But if we're trying to get free agents, you don't have to honor that cap when you're pursuing free agents. And if you sign two guys and you just, revoke the qualifying offer immediately and Portis can't sign it and you have room to sign guys. So from a practical perspective, you have that space too. You know, you can't keep Portis if you sign the guys, but you have that space to lure guys and a couple of things. So to get two free agents, it's a little tricky. It'll depend a little bit if the Bulls are able to dump Felicio's salary this offseason. I don't even know what they're trying. The one thing I thought might work out is if you trade Felicio for Melo, it's a deal where the Bulls swallow a certain amount of room, but then the Thunder can stretch Felicio out over a longer period of time, get his cap hit down to $3 million, and it'll save them a ton more money than if they stretch Melo. So there'd be some pretty good incentive from Oklahoma City to do that. We'll see if something like that happens, or if they could do anything else. If they could move Felicio's contract, they stretch a sheet. They trade their 2019 first and Denzel Valentine, and maybe they trade those two things in order to dump Felicio without taking any money back. If you could get rid of those things off the books, you have enough room for two max free agents. And that's a 30% max free agents, not the like 25% max free agents. It would be like a Zach LaVine's max would have been 25%. So the guys who've been in the league, I think it's more than 7 years. And generally, you're unrestricted free agents. So it's possible, but it would take some doing. But I do think if you got to the point, there's going to be a lot of cap room next year. Not as much as people seem to think, but enough. I do think if you got to the point where you convinced one guy to come and you were going to get a second guy, that you would be able to make the moves you need to get the second guy. You're not that far away from doing it. And even if you had to, you could stretch Felicio, and then you might move Chris Dunn, like if you're bringing in Kyrie Irving or something like that. Or maybe you'd make one of those a sign and trade and you throw Dunn back, and you could do things if you had to in order to make it work. So I think it's a possibility, but it's probably a remote possibility, but it's close enough that if you were able to lure one guy and you would still keep talking with the other guys with the thought of like, we can make this happen.
Well, here's a novel idea about Felicio. How about somebody lights a fire under his rear end and makes him play to at least an acceptable level, since he's only making $7.5 million, I think, in the last year of that deal. After this season, he'll only be owed about $15 million. People act like it is the worst contract in the world, and he does suck, and he is terrible, especially this past season. But at some point, I know there was a large swath of the fan base who thought he was better than Pau Gasol. So you'd like him to at least show up and maybe work out. And to me, that's the biggest thing, is how about this guy just shows up and plays halfway decent or shows some of the signs that he did in order to earn that deal? I mean, he was a complete bum last year. So, I think that's even more realistic than any of these other things I've heard about, forcing him in a trade or making taking on something. Just the guy doesn't make an insane amount of money. Let's just hope he plays up to a certain level that we can move him. I don't know. Just my opinion.
You can hope for the best. The problem with that is you've got Lopez, you've got Markkanen, you've got Carter Jr., and you've got Portis. So you got four guys ahead of Felicio.
He's not playing. Yeah. Agreed.
How is he even going to get a chance to prove himself? Now, and you look at, Brook Lopez just signed a deal for, $3 million or $2.5 million. So you figure you're not trading Robin Lopez at $13 million. Right? I mean, I don't think he's he's a good performer for what he is, but if Brook is making $3 million, I mean, it just shows you where the market on centers is right now. No one wants centers. It doesn't matter if you're decent or not. Just no one wants centers. Everyone is going with five small forwards these days. That's just the way things are running. So, I don't think you can move Brook and Robin. And I think Robin's going to play over Lucio. So, I don't see where the opportunity comes from unless there's some injuries.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting though with Robin Lopez, because I could also foresee a situation where at the trade deadline, that's a valuable expiring deal from a guy who could still contribute to a contender. So let's say the Lakers do want to move Deng, and they're competing for the playoffs and they'd like to bring in a Robin Lopez. There's a dual benefit that he's a good player and he's also an expiring deal that you can maybe turn into something. So I'm very curious to see what happens with a guy like him and a guy like Holiday this year. See if we're competing for a playoff spot, are they going to try to move those guys, because I think they will be valuable at the trade deadline as expiring agreements, or are they going to just try to keep it and make a playoff run? What do you think's going to happen?
Well, it's worth remembering they're only valuable as expiring agreements if you're willing to take long-term salary back. Now, if we're going to consider potentially trying to sign two max guys, and I think we absolutely should, then we shouldn't be taking long-term salary back on expiring deals. So, you know, it does depend what the Bulls do to position themselves. They may say, nah, this two free agent thing, this is just a pipe dream. That's not going to happen. And anytime I bring this thought up, they're pretty much all of Twitter says, no one will ever sign here. The Bulls don't sign anyone. We'll ignore the fact that Carlos Boozer came here for less money. We'll ignore the fact that Pau Gasol came here for less money. You know, we'll ignore the fact that Ben Wallace, when he was a free agent, came here. He was the number one free agent that year. Like, people do come here. I mean, I get it's not L.A., and maybe it's not Miami. You know, I don't know that Miami's history outside of the Big Three is so amazing, including either, though, to be honest. But it's fine. It's not the best. But it's definitely in the top, like, say, 7-8 franchises in the NBA. You know, and if you have a young core that makes the playoffs and looks like it's set for a long run of success, you definitely can lure people. Players go where they can win. That is where players go. I don't know if you remember this, Fred, but a while back, not that long ago, people used to feel Orlando was this amazing place for free agents to go. And, like, Orlando would always get good free agents. Who's Orlando gotten in the last decade?
No.
You know, I mean, so it's like, well, there's a goal, but Orlando's got great weather. People want to be in Florida. Like, fine, yeah, okay. But Orlando hasn't gotten anyone. You know why? Because they suck. Yeah. You don't get people when you're terrible, and when you look like you have a good future, that's when you get people. That's why Carlos Boozer came here. That's why Ben Wallace came here. And because it looked like we had a good future. So, and that's why Pau Gasol came here. And so if the Bulls can win 40 games and have room for two max guys, if I'm Kyrie Irving and I'm Jimmy Butler and I'm thinking, like, then they say, we want to play together and we want to play together in the East, and I'm looking around to say, where can we both fit that has enough room to sign us, which literally might only be the Bulls in the East. You know, just so we throw that out there, that may be the only place that could happen at. And you say, wow, this team has got, you know, a legit power forward, a legit center, a shooting guard, or a small forward, depending where you want to play, you know, Jimmy versus Levine. You know, and it's got a good bench. I mean, this is a team that is a future two-star player is on it, and they perform as well as you and I think they might this year. That is the best team in the East by a gazillion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close. So I think they definitely have a chance at it. I get why people are skeptical. I don't think it's like, oh, 90-10, it'll happen for sure. But it's definitely more than, say, like a 20% chance or a 10% chance or like a 1% chance, is what everyone else seems to think. It's like, there's no way this can happen. And if the Bulls are careful with their space, I think there's, you know, around a 20% chance, 25, 30% chance that they would be able to pull this off. Because it would be the most intelligent decision those guys could make if that rumor is true, that they want to play together in the East.
Yeah, people don't speak rationally on this issue. They conflate two things, two very different things. How the free agent turned out, and the actual signing of the free agent. So, you know, I'll have this argument 100 times a day where, you know, someone will say, Bulls have never been able to sign a free agent. Ben Wallace was the number one free agent in that class. He sucked. Yes, that's a different argument. That's a different thing we're talking about. The results of the signee and how that player played for us, how Carlos Boozer did for us, is completely different from the fact that Carlos Boozer was wanted by about 15 teams in the NBA. I just heard the Nets were after Carlos Boozer, and they lost him to the Chicago Bulls. Or Ben Wallace was the number one free agent, and Pau Gasol was wanted by Oklahoma City. Kevin Durant was trying to recruit him in 2014. And the number one player free agent in that year was Carmelo Anthony, who decided to re-sign with his own team. That's the other point. There's only like four teams in the last 7 years, and this came up in a discussion I had with a Knicks expert this week, where I brought up the point, you know, the Knicks are a cornerstone franchise. They're one of the major franchises in NBA history, and yet, can you name the last free agent that signed with them that was a major, quote-unquote, major free agent? Free agent, someone who was leaving his team to sign with the Knicks. The last one was Amari Stoudemire, 2010. It was considered, you know, pretty good. Right there with Carlos Boozer that year. I would argue Carlos Boozer actually ended up better than Amari Stoudemire. But he made the point, you know, the Knicks wanted Gasol. They lost out on him. What did the Knicks sign in the last 7 years? There's four franchises. Cleveland, since 2010. Miami, Golden State, and the Lakers, since they just signed LeBron, that have done better than the Bulls. Boston traded for Irving. And I know Boston, before 2010, had a nice period, but...
Well, some would say Boston just signed Gordon Hayward.
Gordon Hayward. Okay. There's five teams ahead of them. There you go. There's five teams ahead of them. How good has that turned out? But you're right. Gordon Hayward was a major free agent that they signed. So there's five teams, not four. And the Bulls are six. You know what I mean? Everyone else hasn't had a chance, if you look in the past 7 years. No one's even been in a discussion.
I agree. It's not so many people move. And they do move. They move for good situations. So I think it's interesting to even just evaluate those situations people moved in, right? So you had Miami, who got three guys. And why did they get those three guys? Because they knew they were going to play together. So they had recruiting. And they knew they would have the best team. You got Golden State, got Kevin Durant.
Well, they got two guys, though, Doug. Hold on a second.
Well, okay. Yeah. And that kind of Wade.
They already had Wade. Guys. Well, that's a big thing, right? That's a big thing.
Yeah, yes, for sure. So then, you know, Golden State gets Kevin Durant because they're already basically a title team and have enough room to sign him. You know, all situation. Cleveland gets LeBron James back because he is from there and because it was by far the most likely chance for him to win another title that he could go to. And so, of these situations, then LeBron goes to L.A., God knows why. But so, of these situations, three out of four were basically guys going, like, I'm going to go where the easiest place for me to get title is. Like, that was the deciding factor. This is the easiest place I can get a title is. And so, if the Bulls have room for two max guys, I think that is probably the easiest scenario for winning that two guys could go to get to the finals and have a legitimate chance and a title. I mean, other than like taking the mid-level exception with Golden State or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, that'd be by far the best decision guys could make to earn max money and still have a shot at a title. But only if you get two. If you're only going for one, then one guy could maybe sign at Philly and that becomes better. And it also depends, it's absolutely crucial, all this pie-in-the-sky talk I have is all contingent on the Bulls having a good season this year. If the Bulls win 25 games this year, no one's going to look at them, even if they have room for two maxes, and think, this is where I'm going to go.
I agree. And that's so, why would you let Zach LaVine walk?
Like 40-plus games, and you and I both feel that's possible. It's on the high end of what I think is possible. But if they do it, then I think all of a sudden you are in play for these types of scenarios.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But that's all the more reason why I think you got to sign LaVine, because regardless of how you feel about him, you're not going to find a better answer at shooting guard. And you have to remain competitive. You have to be a good team this year in order to have the situation unfold. And, you know, I just think that he would have been – he does make the team better. He makes it more attractive. And also, in those situations where you are going to make a trade, where you could make a trade, where a situation deteriorates like it has in San Antonio, you got to have pieces. And he would be considered a piece. Now, if he plays like he did last year for an entire season – well, then we got a different problem, but I don't think that's realistic. I don't think he's going to play that bad this year. I think that you can make the argument he had limited minutes and limited games, and he's coming off of ACL surgery, and no one I know of ever plays really well immediately after that. So, I don't know.
I think we all expect Zach to be better. I also agree if you want these scenarios in place. If you didn't keep Zach, here's what you would be doing instead. Your true free agent plan next year would be dead. You'd be nowhere near good enough to convince people to come. You'd have no chance at that. We still may have no chance at that because we may not be good enough. But we'd have definitely no chance otherwise. And so I like the fact that you're still taking the team. Beyond that, you would basically be rebuilding through the draft still. You would be like, all right, we now have basically no assets. And we don't have any shot creators on this team, so where's the offense going to come from? And so you would be probably not bad enough to be in the bottom three, but you'd probably be around 7 or 8 in draft again. And you'd be picking somewhere in the mid-lottery again, hoping to add another piece, hoping you get a good guy, but probably out of the range where you typically find superstars, unless you get lucky in the lottery, and hoping for the best. And then you might be set up through that for a couple of years. You'd instead be trying to use all your cap room to get future assets, but we see that doesn't really seem like a lot of that's on the table right now, despite the fact that Oklahoma City and Denver should both be fairly desperate to pull these trades off. You basically have three teams looking to use their cap room to take on, you know, their money, and no one is willing to give up the picks required by these teams to make it work. Or it's just because there's so many teams willing, even if it's just three teams willing to take on salary, and only a couple people looking to dump salary, you know, the price right now is just not worthwhile. So, you know, that's where you would be at. It wouldn't be a great future. It's not like right now there's a deal out there where if you had cap room, you could, you know, take on one of these magic deals and get a bunch of great picks like Philadelphia has done. Those deals right now aren't on the table because so many teams have gotten screwed with them that teams are far more cautious over the last couple of years in trading away their picks than they were the previous years before that. So I'm okay. I think if you went the other way, you'd just be rebuilding for another couple of years, and you'd probably be doing so without prime assets. If Levine fails, we'll basically be in the same boat, except with $20 million less cap room. But you won't be able to use that cap room anyway if you're rebuilding. Like, yes. It's not like you're going to get anyone good, so it doesn't really become as big a problem, honestly. I mean, it would suck if that happens, but if you end up having to rebuild through the draft, it just doesn't become as big a problem. So I think it's clearly the right decision.
So what's your answer to those on Twitter who are freaking out because the Bulls haven't made any free agent moves other than obviously Levine matching the Kings offer? I see the jokes with the pictures of John Paxson, you know, missing, you know, the milk carton nonsense. What do you say to those people that are critiquing them every day for their inaction?
I must have different Twitter followers than you because I'm not seeing anyone really criticizing the Bulls for inaction. Well, they got like 12 guys in the roster right now. I mean, like, I don't know what you want. I think that's not counting Zipser or Kilpatrick. If you keep those guys, I think you're at 14. So I don't know what you want. I mean, and the Bulls right now, they should be preserving cap space. So what, you want to sign someone to a one-year deal? I mean, yeah, it's fine. Go out and get someone to a one-year deal. You know, I don't mind if you want to do that, but it's not like there's, you know, this year is a transition year a little bit. You know, it's a building year. You're not going to sign a long-term piece this offseason because you need to keep your cap room open if you're smart. So I don't really give a crap if they sign a one-year filler guy. You know, if he helps them win a little bit, that's nice. But, you know, you're really looking to develop your guys. So, I mean, I don't think you really want to sign a filler guy to minutes. And you definitely want to keep that room open in case you can get assets by taking on some of these contracts. So I think what they're doing is absolutely the right thing right now. I wouldn't change anything about what they're doing with their cap room, and I don't see much people really asking for that either.
No, I've seen it. I don't know why, but I've noticed it quite a bit. Is a lot of jokes about their inaction, and you know, I the animosity towards the front office is insane. I've spent some time over to the vacation trying to figure out why. I think it's clear there's two things. It was the Thibodeau firing and, you know, a lot of mouth breathers, and fans in general just loved the guy. And I think that was a one point that did it. But the other, I think, is a lot more just general frustration that, you know, this team didn't achieve, or the team in 2010 and 11 never achieved what they could have, which was a title. I personally felt that team was good enough to win a title. I'd like to ask you a question, and I'm going to make a statement afterwards, and then like to get your opinion on this. Did you think the 2010-11, that team, and the following year, 2011-12, where Derek unfortunately tore his ACL, did you think that team was good enough to win a title?
I think probably they would have had like a puncher's chance at it. I think they needed to get another piece. If that team had stayed healthy for, say, 5 years, and you had the period where Jimmy Butler came into his prime, you know, and became like a legit player, and Derrick Rose is still a superstar, Derrick Rose, I think they would have had an excellent chance.
Yeah. I personally think they could have I think it was that 2010-11 Eastern Conference Final was a lot closer than the, you know, five games that it went, and all those games I could point to, I think, mistakes on Thibodeau. But regardless, one thing that people always talk about is Rose's injury and his, you know, degradation to, you know, from MVP to good or maybe just average. No one really talks about Noah, and I went back and looked. Noah made the 2013-14 NBA All-First Team. And within a year, in the very next season's playoffs, he became a complete liability on the offensive end, and I think almost a liability defensively. He went from shooting 74% from the free throw line to 35% in the 2015 playoffs, where he couldn't even hit anything. And that was also, if you recall, the team that won 50 games, that went to the second round, and he was half the player he was the year before. The Bulls didn't have just one. They had two core pieces decline to an amount that they weren't even approaching what they were before in extremely short period of time on long-term contracts. And so I made this point to Waddle and Sylvie this past week, and I'll make it to you. As much as Danny Ainge is beloved, if Gordon Hayward goes out after 11 games this season, like Derek did in year two after an injury, and Horford declines like Noah did in the final 2 years of his deal, the Celtics will be every bit as disappointing as the Bulls were. Tatum will be just like Jimmy Butler. It's not going to be any different. They're just going to be just as disappointing. What say you?
I think that's probably true. I think actually maybe a little better, because Kyrie could probably, with Tatum and Brown, if those guys are legit, those three guys could probably still carry a team further than the Bulls. And also, they have an outstanding chance to make the finals just with who's left in the East. There's a couple of great stats going around. I think it was Joakim Noah was the only person in the Eastern Conference to ever make an NBA first team.
Yes.
Right now, today. And I think the other one was maybe Joakim Noah and one other guy were the only players in the Eastern Conference to ever get an MVP vote in their careers.
Wow.
And I forget who the other player was. Might have been Giannis, who got one last year. But either way, it just shows the conference is really weak right now. So even a disappointing Boston team, I think you would probably look to as being favored to make it to the finals. And then just getting just stomped by whoever is there, will still give them some feeling of validation, right? Like, oh, we made it to the finals. We're almost there, even though you're not really almost there because you didn't have to beat one of the top four teams in the league on your path to get there. So I don't think it'll be... They won't be viewed as disappointing, but they certainly won't win. They will have no chance of winning. And, we'll see. If they lose Kyrie, and someone was telling me Kyrie already said he's not going to re-sign in Boston, then, they could easily end up in a position where they're not so great. I mean, you expect Horford to start declining anyway. Been on a pretty steady decline, actually. And even though people are excited about Brown and Tatum for what they did in the playoffs, their full season stats were not really anything special.
Especially Brown.
I'm not necessarily on the train of these guys are future superstars. They look like great prospects. But I put them on the same kind of general tier as I would put Lowry in terms of guys who I feel are good prospects who still have quite a bit to show and prove, before I'm going to put them on the superstar train.
Yeah, just looking at really quick before we get into the next topic, 2013-14 first team All-NBA. Kevin Durant, forward. LeBron James, forward. James Harden, guard. Chris Paul, guard. Joakim Noah, center. Again, the Bulls, just the decline they had from two core pieces so quickly with guys in their prime. It's never happened in the history of the league. Never. And, the Bulls to turn it around, I think, so quickly after dealing with that, it's amazing. It really is. And it doesn't get enough. It's not talked about enough.
Let's see if they turn it around.
Okay.
We expect them to turn it around. They've not done that yet.
I'm a believer.
I think if they turn it around this year, you'll see people back on the bandwagon.
I hope so.
People always look at what have you done for me lately? It's been a frustrating run. And when you've been in the seat as long as Paxton and Foreman have been in the seat, you got a lot of well-publicized misses, and people view running a team as if a good GM is just makes 100% right decisions, and really that's just not the case, right? Yeah. It just isn't. If you made 65% good decisions, you're probably one of the best in the league. It just isn't the case where you can just always be right. And so when you're in the seat long enough, there'll always be examples of bad things, and the people who are upset about the way things have turned out will ignore all the context those bad things happened under and just say, but these things. And so it just is the way it is. It's like that in sports. It's just like coaches are hired to be fired. the same with general managers. Usually are only there for a certain period of time, and then they move on. You know, if you just don't have success, whether that's fair or not, that's how most teams operate, not how the Bulls operate. And so it's been frustrating for fans who are just like, why do these guys get like 15 years to keep trying at it, even though I think they've done a pretty good job. And I think Reinsdorf has been smart to say and look at them and be like, if I had someone else, do I think they would have done better? And he comes up with the answer of no, so I'm not going to fire them, even if, you know, the performance hasn't been, you know, leading to a title.
Doug, I agree with you 100%. Like, there's no bigger supporter of John Paxson than I am. But if this iteration and this wave, you know, he's had basically two waves up until now, and this is the third one, right? You know, you had the Ben Gordon, Heinrich, Dang. That was great story. Turned that whole Kraus mess quickly. And then he built a team around Rose and Noah. And that was fantastic, too, for the most part, and injuries derailed that train. And now we have one that's built on Lowry and the young guys, and Dunn and the young guys. And if this one doesn't work out, I'm fine. Let's try something new and go in a different direction. I don't believe anybody else is going to be significantly better. I don't think it's possible, but I'd at least be open to it. You know, until now, I think all the criticisms have been largely unfair because no one's perfect and everybody just focuses on the few misses, you know. Let's move on.
I'll be honest. If they make the playoffs this year and they reposition themselves after missing the playoffs for a grand total of 1 year, and they reposition themselves to be back in the playoffs with a team full of all guys who are under 25 as the main contributors, and then that team tops out at like the second round, I don't care. I'm still giving them another chance. It's an amazing recovery to be down for a year and to restock the team so well and deep.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to lead to a title to me. It just shows you can consistently find good talent. You can consistently put it together. You can consistently rebound quickly. Most teams who are bad languish in no man's land for a half decade. And so if you show me that you can get out of that in a year consistently, which this would be the third time they do, if they do it this year and make the playoffs, then I'm sorry. I'll give you a fourth chance. Yeah. And if that doesn't pan out, but you get back and you make the playoffs after only missing one time and you get back to being good again with all young pieces that have potential, I'll give you another one. Like, I mean, they have to actually show that they aren't good at what they do. You know, they're just rise and fall. Being a GM is a curve, and so you have the ups and the downs. And they have to show that their downs are always very small, and, you know, I just keep giving them chances until they show that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt what they have right now, if you look at this team, you got Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. now, who we'll get into shortly. You got Dunn, Levine, Valentine, Portis. I argue, I made a statement, this is the best collection of talent, 24 and under. I don't think there's anybody in the league with a better overall collection of talent. You might find teams like Philadelphia, Boston with one or two guys. But when you talk about six guys, seven guys, I think the Bulls overall, you're not going to find anything better. Under 24 and under.
They very much have the Boston model. If you think of Boston a couple of years ago, Boston just had a ton of young pieces and no stars. And the Bulls have that model right now. So we'll see where things go. Anyway, let's move on.
Let's get into Jimmy and Kyrie. Well, let's get into it. Give your take on this because, you know, I know I'm going to have probably a different opinion than most people.
Well, if you can get them, you do it. I don't care what your take is. You'd be an effing moron if you had that opportunity and said no.
Oh, really?
You just try it. Yes. You can have two guys that good, especially because they feel like right now, what is your line? You'd have Carter, Markkanen, Levine, Jimmy, and Kyrie as your starting five. Like five guys who can shoot, five guys who are playmakers. That team would romp over everyone in the East. If those guys stay healthy, that is a team that's going to make the finals for the next 4 years after that. Like, you take that. I'm sorry. You don't got anything better than that. You take that. And the other thing is, if you got those guys and they stay healthy, 2020 comes around and Anthony Davis wants out, you got a crap load of assets to trade for him, and you can add Anthony Davis to your mix, probably. Like, you just have to go for that. There's just no better scenario than that. I mean, I get, like, I'm not that excited about Jimmy, nor am I that excited about Kyrie, like, by themselves, but I think if I could add those two guys to the team we have, like, I just don't see, you know, fine, if I could get Kawhi instead, or Durant, or someone even better, yes, do that instead. But if I could get those two guys rather than worse guys, and that was like the two best guys I could get, I would be in on that so fast.
All right, here's a counter. I know you're going to say I'm nuts. At what point for the Chicago Bulls or any organization does durability ever come into the equation when you sign these guys to insane amounts of money? Is there anybody out there that feels that this Chris Paul deal that was just signed is going to end well? It's not going to end well. It was incredibly dumb. They're not winning anything over the next 5 years because he won't be healthy. Kyrie Irving, in case anybody hasn't noticed, has like been able to finish like one season out of the last four. He's always hurt. He's always has injury concerns. I love Kyrie Irving as a player. I think he's great. I think he's a fantastic player. But I have major concerns about this guy's future in the NBA when so much of it is dependent on quickness and being able to handle the ball and get to the rim. And Jimmy Butler, too, is getting up there a little bit. He's going closer to 30. What is he, 28 years old? You're going to sign both of these guys to 4 or 5 year deals for insane amounts of your cap room. And I'm not sure either guy is going to remain healthy. I don't believe in either guy remaining healthy. I have a bigger concern about Butler too, in that he's got problems now with Minnesota since he's been the alpha dog there. He doesn't like his teammates. He didn't like his teammates in Chicago, and he didn't get along with Derrick Rose. Ever since this guy's turned into an alpha, he's had major issues with the players on his team. That's also disturbing. I just don't even think it's realistic. Like, I don't think it's even going to remotely happen. So that's why I don't even like talking about it. I prefer Anthony Davis.
I guess that it might
Davis.
Not happen. But if it does, you take it. And I agree with all those concerns. They're all valid concerns. They're all legit. But you still take it. Because that is a team that, if people are healthy, will make the NBA Finals every year. They would have so much more talent than any team in the East. It would be ridiculous. They would just be the team. So you take it. You take that chance. Yes, you're risking health. Yes, you're risking that maybe Jimmy's a diva. But you take that chance, absolutely, 10 times out of 10, because there's no better thing you can do.
Yeah, I'd prefer to go the other alternative is keep collecting these assets, and you have major ones now.
You're not going to get any new assets after this year if they're good.
Well.
What are you going to get? You're going to have the 15th pick in the draft? Then the next year, if the guys continue to improve, you're going to get the 23rd pick in the draft. Like, you're not going to get great assets from here on out.
Right. You
just aren't. You got free agent money.
Well,
and
if
so
you bring somebody
the best
on,
free agent
right.
assets you could get would be two star players in the NBA. Two legit, regular, every year, all-star caliber players. And I know you're concerned about Jimmy Butler. He actually has way, way less minutes than a normal guy his age. Like, way less minutes. Because he played an extra year of college, and he was an older college guy to begin with. And then he barely played his first couple of years in the league. He is like half the minutes of Luol Deng at the same age. Like people say, like, oh, Thibs runs everyone to the ground. He's got like half the minutes of Luol Deng at the same age.
Yeah,
I do think it's more the age than the minutes, but he definitely is not like a high wear guy for his age. And I also agree with what you said about Kyrie. Definitely big injury history. I completely have those concerns. They're totally valid. I just think you still have to go for it.
Yeah,
it probably won't happen.
The Anthony Davis is the
it.
One
it
that
won't.
The
if
Anthony
it does,
yeah, the Anthony Davis yeah. is the one I keep on looking at. Where I man, there's got to be some way. And do we have enough? If Wendell Carter Jr. ends up being great, and that's a piece that we could somehow package or whoever it is, you got to have one really good player. You know, if it's Laurie, we keep her. You have to keep somebody who's good, so you don't bring Davis here to a team with nothing. But if you can build
guards.
Enough, what?
You need guards. You need guards. You can't just bring Anthony Davis and Lowry. Like, you need guards in this league, too.
Yeah, agreed. But I'd almost figure that out. I'd be willing to trade the whole team. You know, maybe figure out a way to get it, make it done, give five first-round picks for the next 10 years, whatever, to get it done.
Davis
and get
ain't
him.
Getting younger, either, just so we know. I mean,
what is he, 25? He's 25
like
years old.
At 2020, he'll be finishing up his second contract, like when he's a free agent.
Yeah.
He'll also be like 28 at that time, right? Right around that age, so.
Right. Well, he's the one guy I do love. I want to talk a little bit about Boogie Cousins because, the reaction
let's,
to
let's
me.
Let's hope it's very little. Okay.
Well, were you as appalled by the reaction in general? You know, of course, people shooting, giving shots. Why didn't the Bulls look into it? It's like if people not noticed, this guy almost every team he's been on has made the team worse. He's a complete can't. Everybody, it's so ridiculous how the league did, they gave him to the Warriors. I'm just like so fed up with the stupidity on this. Let's get your hot take on it.
I didn't see very many people who were Bulls fans who wanted Boogie. I didn't want him. I mean, after the Achilles, like, what are you going to do? You
may not I didn't want him before the Achilles, Doug.
No one around the league wanted him.
Let's say he was perfectly healthy.
A one-year deal. I think it was a weird signing for both him and the Warriors. The Warriors need guys who can actually play, right? So their stars can stay healthy, which Cousins can't. They could use someone who could defend, which Cousins can't. I mean, Cousins needs a chance to, like, get shots to prove, like, he's a decent player, which he won't get. It's just a weird fit all around. The Lakers even said like they didn't want him at the same price the Warriors paid, and like they would you think be desperate for a star. Like, look, this guy, there's no reason to feel anything but glee that he's not on the Bulls.
Well, yeah, the thing that made me nauseous was the general Boogie took a $5.3 million deal to play with a winner, and I made this point. Some moron called a sports radio station and said, Zach LaVine. I have to question Zach LaVine because he signed a deal with the Kings. What kind of player signs a deal with the Kings? And I'm like, if Boogie Cousins was given the exact same deal that LaVine was by the Kings, he's signing it immediately. It's like, don't paint this guy as some kind of hero because he decided to sign with the Golden State Warriors. He didn't get, from what I heard, any offers. Allegedly, the Pelicans, gave him an offer probably to satisfy that they made an attempt for Anthony to keep Anthony Davis happy. But I mean, give me a break. He signed a 1 year deal with Golden State. Like, he's some kind of hero because he did that. I don't understand.
He's not a hero. I don't think anyone is painting him that.
Doug.
It's a weird dynamic in the NBA where if you take less money and join a super team, people sometimes criticize you for just joining a super team and making the league imbalanced and it's too easy for you. But then if you chase the money, people criticize you for not caring about winning. No matter how you slice it, really what it is it's sour grapes. People are upset that a guy didn't sign with their team or do what they want him to do. If I'm a player, I'm probably chasing the money most of the time, but Cousins already got paid one super huge contract. He's got a ton of money. I think he took the only deal. It was the best deal he could find. He might have been able to get a couple million dollars extra, but to go to Golden State and win a title, it's probably, if I had $100 million or something in my life and I could work and achieve the highest level of success in my career for $5 million, or I could get $7 million and not achieve that, I would probably, take the $5 million and the success. So it makes sense all around for Cousins to maybe do that, financially. And I don't even know if there was a better deal than the $5 million, to be honest. He did not seem to get a lot of look from anyone, and for good reason. I don't know. To me, there's not a whole lot to discuss about him. I'm glad he's not a Bull, and anyone who wants him, hey, more power to you. But I kind of get it before he tore the Achilles, but after the Achilles, go Google NBA players returning from Achilles and see how many of those guys you would ever want.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a pretty terrible list. And Cousins is also a guy who's not super young anymore. He's not at the age of 22 where maybe you could get over this. Once you hit 20, I forget how old he is, but I want to say he's 27, 28. You're at a point in your career as well where, you start to slow down on your injury recovery. Never a super plus athlete. The guy who's, I would say, conditioning is not amazing relative to
agreed.
Other players. And he also now plays in probably the most devalued position in the NBA as a center. So I'm glad he's not a Bull. I'm glad it's worked out for, that way.
Yeah, I do want to say one thing. I think he unwittingly put himself in really a no-win situation in that the Golden State was the prohibitive favorite, before he signed. And if they win, depending on how he does, people are going to say, well, they would have won anyhow. And if they lose...
No one thinks Golden State is winning because Cousins is there, for sure.
Yeah, if they lose... Well, what's the delta between the team before and now? I could see a situation where Kerr hardly played a center at the end of the last 3 months. I hardly saw any of their centers out there. I could see a situation where Kerr doesn't even play him. And do you think this guy's going to take that well in a contract year. I don't
I don't
see.
think it's going to work out for him well in terms of getting his next deal.
Agreed.
I said that at the beginning. I don't think this is a good move for him if he wants to maximize his next deal. It is a good move for him if he wants to win a title and get a ring, which if he's already made $100 million might seem like, yeah, that's a pretty good thing to do. Can't get money any other way this year. Might as well win a ring and then we'll just see what happens.
Let's get into the final segment before we wrap things up on the great Wendell Carter Jr. and Hutchinson debut over the weekend. Love to get your 4-on-1. Did you get the chance to watch both games, and what's your take?
I did watch both games. I thought Wendell Carter looked pretty good. I'm a little surprised at how effusive the praise is for him by everyone, which is maybe a little surprising to me. To me, Carter looks exactly like you should have expected him to look, like if you knew anything about Wendell Carter. He looked pretty good defensively. Showed some really nice shot blocking out there. Offensively, he was hesitant, definitely not very aggressive, pretty passive. Hit a couple of threes the first game, but overall passed on a lot of shots. I thought he didn't show a lot of bounce or energy. There's a lot of times where just rebounding, where I felt if he had just like really attacked, he could have gotten rebounds and caused havoc and done other stuff, but he didn't. He made really good decisions, showed good footwork, showed very good knowledge of the game. I thought he was good on switches. Thought he did a good job on help defense and moved very intelligently. Thought his screens were pretty terrible. It seems like he almost never made contact with a player when trying to set a screen. Either that or our summer league guards just have no idea how to use a screen. But whatever, the communication wasn't there because people were able to fight over his screens and he barely made contact with them every time. I thought he made good cuts to the basket off screens or cuts to space to roll out and find open positions on the court. Overall, it was pretty much good and bad, exactly what I thought it would be. And, I think in the end, that is a lot more good than bad.
Yeah, I defensively he was freaking awesome. I don't he had a he had a couple of plays where he switched out on a guard. One of the block shots was a switch out on the guard. The guard tried to take it to the hoop and he blocked it into the first row. As far as blocking shots and rim defending, he was better. I mean, it's hard not to get too excited over two summer league games. I don't think anyone should get that excited, but it's impossible not to because all those things will translate. When you see a guy block a shot like he did on a center with two hands and take the ball, I mean, it was freaking incredible. And I think defensively, that's all I cared about. That's all I wanted to see. Offensively, he shot 40% from three, 2 for 5. Those two things are all I care about with this guy. And that's all I expected from him. And he more than brought it on the defensive end. I was really, really impressed with his defense. And even the one where he, Wagner, when he blocked his shot blocking was fantastic. And that's what I wanted to see because that's going to be the best combo with Lowry. Lowry, I don't think is going to be ever a really plus defender, but I think he's going to be great offensively. And I think these two guys are going to mesh really well for that. I don't think you're going to need to have Carter become an A-plus scorer, but he's going to cover up for Lowry in the defensive end. And I think Lowry's going to cover up for him in the offensive end. But most importantly, if he can keep on shooting at 40% from three, you're going to have a 4 and a 5 that can hit the three. You're going to pull every big center and power forward out 25 feet. There's the runways for LaVine and Dunn. That's all I wanted to see. And that's why I think people are excited was his defensive presence. And you admitted it. It was great. It was extremely positive.
I agree. I thought his shot blocking was definitely the biggest positive of what he had out there. I'd like to see him be more aggressive offensively. Not that I think he's going to carry that into his Bulls time, I guess, but when he has an open three, he should shoot it. And he passed up on a good amount of open threes.
Fair criticism.
And then his rebounding, I didn't think was that good. Like I said, I think that's an area that I expect him to improve and do more in. And just his overall physicality and conditioning seemed a little lackluster. Very frequently, the last one back on either offense or defense, just kind of slowly moving down. Not a great sign for someone who's 19. So I don't take a whole lot from any of those things. I'm not trying to totally dampen the fire on the Block Panther, as his new nickname is has been coined on Real GM.
Thanks, Debbie Downer. You're being Debbie Downer. It was
that's fine.
It was a fantastic debut, and I'll be damned if I'm going to let you ruin it. He was awesome defensively.
Play devil's advocate to the big red Colt.
All I got to say is I cannot freaking wait till this season begins because I think he's going to be first-team All-NBA rookie. I'm going to say it right now. I love the kid, and I think he's going to be a great fit with Larry. And I think – what do you think of Hutch? I
agree with both those statements.
What do you think of Hutch?
Nothing exciting. If you say you saw something great out of him, I'd say you're just looking to see something great. he had a couple decent moves, looked fine. But, I mean, like nothing – like Antonio Blakeney had as many great moves as Hutchinson did. So and probably actually more. I'm not that excited about anything I saw from him. But I'll say the same thing I would say about Carter and about everyone else. It's summer league. I also didn't see anything that made me say, wow, there's no way this guy can do it. It's fine. He had some good plays. He had the alley-oop. He had a couple of good drives. Drew some fouls, a couple of them maybe a little questionable in that first game. But overall, low percentage shooting, I don't know. It's such a weird environment. You get really amped for the first couple of games and try and figure there's some meaning there. But like later on, you realize these games are worthless. Like they're worth less than preseason, and preseason is worthless. So, I don't take too much either way. I do agree. Carter showed enough that I brought some excitement. And maybe I'm less excited because I was super high on Carter to begin with, much like you.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. I expected him to do this. But the people who are like, oh, this guy's just boring. He's going to suck. Like, oh, holy crap. This guy just blocked the hell out of these people.
Yeah.
He can actually play defense. Well, yeah. That's
what we expected.
Yeah. I get why maybe you're surprised because you just were drinking the Haterade or whatever. But,
talking about Mo Bamba.
It's all good stuff for now. I'll watch the however many more games they have, but we won't really know what we have until the season starts. But I do expect first team rookie for sure, and I think he will be one of the better players in this draft.
All right, now we're pulling the bus in for another. Thank you for another stellar performance. You did great
job. One more topic, Fred.
Oh, go ahead.
You got 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
Jerian Grant trade. How are we not talking about
my God.
Jerian Grant trade?
I almost. Blacked out his whole period with us until you reminded me. I almost forgot about him completely. What one of the greatest trades in Bulls history to get the player? He's one of the most. I was going over this in my head, like the players I couldn't stand on the Bulls. He's right up there. I've never seen a guard with less ability to throw a post pass than that bum. And I don't know how many games I watch where Markkanen's wide open in the post. Come on, get it to him, and he throws it. Either chucks up a three or throws it to the other perimeter. This guy, please get this guy off this team. And I was ecstatic they were able to move him for cap space.
You know why you don't like Jerian Grant?
Why? Tell me why.
Kirk Heinrich.
He's not Kirk Heinrich. As bad as Kirk Heinrich
maybe
is.
Without defense.
And as over
he's
like,
is. He's like a shoot-first point guard who, for some reason... Like, he only makes the most conservative pass possible. Like, he's, over dribbles the ball. Like, just doesn't really, do anything. He's like Kirk Heinrich.
You realize our friend from Australia just threw up on himself listening to this. I'm pretty sure he did.
Probably. But that's, Mark, I'm pretty sure that's why
you
don't
like okay?
him. Because he's just, all the downside of, Kirk Heinrich after his one good year. He's like, that's who he was. He's like... This guy doesn't really make anything happen, as a point guard, and just holds the ball too long.
Yeah.
And that's who he is. And so the reason I wanted to bring up Jerian Grant is not because I think we should care too much about his trade. I'm fine moving him for cap space. I'd have been fine if they kept him for point guard depth. Even though I joke, I think Jerian Grant was fine as, your third point guard. He's pretty solid. He can score, here and there and make some plays. For a third guard, point guard, totally fine. He was making $2 million and change, which is, money for a third point guard. So that no problem with that at all. And either way, I'm good. The reason I bring it up is people, were freaking out that we didn't get more of a return for Jerian Grant, on the trade market. What did you think this guy was worth? And so the only thing I can come up with is you just hate the front office so much that just anything they do, you're pissed off about.
That's
you're just
right.
pissed off about anything they do. Like, they traded Jerian Grant for cap space, and you're pissed off. Was there anyone who was like, oh, man, Jerian Grant, thank God he's here, 2 days before this trade happened? No one said anything about this guy. No one cared about him. No one had him on their depth chart anywhere. No one thought he's part of the future. No one thought a thing about Jerian Grant. But the Bulls dump him to get cap room. And, you know, they can't say, and people are like, oh, they're just saving money. No, they can't save money on it because they're below the salary floor. So they're going to have to pay the money anyway. So they're not even saving cash on this deal right now. So they either get some extra flexibility with this, and maybe they'll find a way to use it. Maybe they won't. We don't know. But they have some extra flexibility. And to me, that's probably better than having Jerian Grant. You know, I mean, I don't know that Archie Diacono is any worse than Jerian Grant, to be honest. I'm not like I like him a whole lot either, but like,
yeah, I agree.
Or Antonio Blakeney or whatever. I mean, like, these are all guys just you could throw out there as your third guard if you had to. So, like, there's nothing to this deal one way or the other, but people are up in arms. Like, I can't believe they didn't get a future second rounder. No one is giving you anything for Jerian Grant. There's going to be guys at the vet minimum who are better than Jerian Grant who signed. I'm surprised anyone even traded for him.
I don't even think it belongs to the NBA.
It's a nothing thing, but people are so upset, and I'm like, why? Why?
It's weird. We don't have the same Twitter followers. I didn't see that. I would have gone off on him. I mean, Jerian Grant sucked for the Bulls. He had a perfect chance when Rondo got hurt to step up. That's his chance. It's not like he was 18 years old or 19. He's like 25 years old. The guy totally choked it. He sucks. He's terrible. And I'm glad he's gone. And anybody who's complaining about it is a moron. I would be happy to get it. I don't even care about the cap space. I'd be happy to get used donuts or like just like a can of oil. I would be happy for nothing. Just give him away. Guy sucks. It's unbelievable that people are complaining about it. And Ryan, I think Ryan Archinocado or whatever his name is sucks. I call him Ryan Archinot in the NBA. But he's still better than Jerian Grant, and I'm glad he's gone. On that note, we'll go.
We can park the bus.
Yeah, we park the bus. I'll see you next week, brother. Good stuff, man.
All right. See you next week.
Take it easy, man. Bye-bye. And Mark, our friend from Australia, Doug was only kidding. Please tell him you were only kidding, Doug, about Jerian Grant equals Kirk Heinrich. Even I'll say Kirk Heinrich had a good 2006.
Kirk Heinrich. That's why you hate him. Same player.
All right, man. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.